You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes!
The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
We're going to talk some food here with Carlos Frias of the Miami Herald in a second and Billy Corbin. Get to some local inventions in the food industry with Carlos Frias, the food critic, sort of food critic for the Miami Herald. But before we do that, Billy, I wanted to get into whether or not you were actually able to rouse some rabble, whether you were able to rake some muck. Were you able to do anything with this Ron McGill? It went viral. He's furious. There's a picture of him. He's pointing in the most serious of fashion with the thumb holding up his finger, and it's a fist, and he's rabid at a city commission meeting because he was only allowed 1 minute to talk, and developers were allowed a lot of time to talk. And so we have inundated the mayor's office with a whole lot of email from our army. Tell the people what it is they need to do to continue this cause and what needs to happen for a mayoral veto to actually take place.
Indeed, rabble raised, muck raked. Ron pissed a lot of people off inside and outside the commission, the county commission. Now, I think the mayor's received about over 2,500 emails from savecalusa.good.do. Thanks really to you and to Ron. I think she's getting inundated now. Yeah, they're coming from all over the country, but preserving wildlife and our natural resources is not uniquely the interest of the community. It's the interest of the entire world. And I think the mayor, this is Danielle Levine-Cava, the county mayor of Miami-Dade. I think she cares about it. Now, what I think the problem is that there is what we call a veto-proof majority because it was 10 of the 13 commissioners voted for it. Now, if Danielle Levine-Cava were to veto it, I think that would be very influential. I think some of the commissioners because a lot of them just follow what they call the home commissioner. So if a project is in a particular district, in this case, it was Raquel Regalado's district, if she's for it, some of the other commissioners just kind of defer to them.
You still haven't heard from her, right? You reached out her and you still haven't heard from her.
I asked her which lobbyist I should pay to get a call back from her. I also live in her district. I'm a constituent of hers. So this is not only my interest as a member of the media and inviting her on to the show to explain. Here's the problem. There is no legitimate explanation for this. Ron told us last week on the show, he said that there is no one spoke up in a way that indicated why there is a pressing need for this or why there's a community desire for this. There is in fact not. The people of Miami-Dade, the people of this neighborhood, have not been listened to at all by their government. They've been totally ignored. Danielle Levine-Cava, the mayor, has a chance to hear them and to respond to them. Now, even if her veto was ultimately overturned, I don't think that's an excuse to not do the right thing. Meaning she still, when she was a commissioner, in fact, she voted against allowing this covenant to be lifted and them to bulldoze this parks and recreation area, which is supposed to stay parks and recreation. They have now declared it, as of this vote, for high density development. I mean, talk about night and day. Talk about polar opposites. They literally go from this is in the master plan of the county. This is a covenant from 1967 that's supposed to last 99 years to be parks and recreation, open air, green space.
A covenant sounds more sacred. When you're the word covenant, makes it feel to me like we're really disrespecting something that should not be disrespected
for money. That's the truly cynical part of it, is that it's all for money. You send a message to developers that, well, if you just pay off enough people, that in government, outside of government, neighbors divide and conquer, pit communities against each other, that you're going to ultimately win the day, that the county commission is just going to let you get away with this. This was a gimme for the county commission. If the county commission wanted to prove, hey, we don't just roll over for every developer that comes into town and starts donating money to us and buying off residents. We don't do that. We're going to take a look at individual projects and make responsible decisions. This was an easy one for them. They could have denied this and said, and forever use this as the one example of the one time they didn't act like they were in a Carl Hiaasen novel. And they blew it. They totally, totally blew it. I'd be writing all of them and telling them shame on them. But for the moment, the battle was lost, but not the war. You have to fight these things one battle at a time. And best thing we can hope for now is that Danielle Levine-Cava, the mayor of Miami-Dade, will veto it. Will use her power as a strong mayor in her veto pen.
Tell the people again the exact, make this as easy as possible for them. And I'm going to tell the audience right now, if you want to help Ron McGill, something he cares about, the animals and Miami. If you, Ron McGill tends to be on the right side of these things. If you've gotten Ron McGill to righteous indignation, you have probably done something really wrong. So if our listeners want to support Ron McGill on this cause, how can they do so by contacting the mayor directly?
You go to Save Calusa. S-A-V-E, Calusa is the name of the neighborhood, C-A-L-U-S-A, savecalusa.good.do. Savecalusa.good.do.
Takes 60 seconds, right, to fill. You don't, if you don't even want to write the letter, it's written for you. If you want to add anything personal, you can do so there, but you can just do this in 30 seconds.
There's a button right on that page. You can't miss it. It says, send my email to Mayor Cava, and you should. And listen, my resting mood is pissed, is righteous indignation. Ron is a lot mellower than I am about most of this type of shit. And so you know that if he's worked up, and his credibility is unassailable. This is not a guy that goes out on a limb on stuff
like
this.
And he's fighting a whole lot of people. This is not an easy thing to do, and it's a bit dangerous to do, given that he is employed in a precarious situation where people usually don't speak like this.
He's an employee of the county. He literally went to effectively his bosses in the elected officials of Miami-Dade County. He is an employee of Miami-Dade County at the county
zoo.
And
they told him to shut up after a minute.
Well, he would argue after 58 seconds that he had 2 seconds left on the clock. But he went on his own time. Even when we did the podcast last week, he had an opening for 30 minutes for lunch. And he made sure that we, because he's not allowed to politic or, you know, do any of this or express his opinion on the county's time. He can only do it on his time. And he's done it. And he's still doing it. And he did a great interview with the Miami New Times. It scares the government in the best possible way to know that somebody like Ron McGill is watching them. And the best way to remind them of that and indicate that to them is this glut of emails that the mayor is receiving right now.
This is a giant food week. You need only look at me to know that I like giant food. So I am all for a giant food week. Carlos Frias is a food critic of the highest order locally, and Billy wanted to ask him an assortment of food-related questions, cultural questions, so have at it, Billy. Where do you want to start with Carlos? Thank you for joining us, Carlos.
I put the ass into assortment. What I love about Carlos in his writing, I don't know that he's a food critic. He rarely, if ever, writes reviews, restaurant reviews, which is, I guess, what you'd expect from a local paper's food writer. He writes about food culture and food history, of which Miami is rich in. For his articles alone is reason enough to subscribe to the Miami Herald. Carlos, thank you for being here. And I want to jump right out with some controversy because you have been a war reporter embedded on the front lines of the decades-long Cuban sandwich wars here in the state of Florida. And there's a lot of people listening all over the country and all over the world who have no idea what the hell I'm talking about right now. Could you please explain what the Cuban sandwich wars are?
All right. For as long as people have been eating Cuban sandwiches, they've been arguing about who invented it. Now, like Tampa has not only staked the claim, they like included it in their charter or something that they invented the Cuban sandwich.
Bullshit. That Tampa did not. Tampa did not.
The Florida of Florida.
Tampa did not.
Yeah. Tampa's got stories. They just like they incessantly come out with this point that, you know, heaven forbid that an actual Cuban in Cuba invented a Cuban sandwich, right? But no, but Tampa invented it. They put salami in it and it said, you know, oh, we invented the Cuban sandwich because we put salami in it. No, you made a salami sandwich.
This is a scandal.
Because a Cuban sandwich doesn't, that's not how you eat a Cuban sandwich.
Right.
It's all wrong.
This is the scandal. The Tampa Cuban sandwich where they claim to have invented the damn thing.
What the hell is salami doing in a Cuban sandwich?
Well, you know, it's salami from the famous city of Genoa, Cuba, obviously, is what you had. Like, it doesn't make any sense in the world. A Cuban sandwich is, first of all, on Cuban toast. It is roasted pork, ham, mustard, pickles, and Swiss. That's it, basically.
That's
right?
That's it.
No salami.
Yeah, that's it. No salami. No friggin' salami. Now, I mean, like, okay, I have a buddy of mine who's a food critic in Tampa, and he's co-written this book that's coming out next year, and he says he's from Tampa, and he says that there is that Tampa is not the originator of the sandwich. Big surprise. And then that he will reveal at a later date a city that they have that has not been discussed. Ooh. That is not the originator of the Cuban sandwich.
My bet was going to be
Havana, perhaps.
My bet would have been Key West. The idea was, though, that where Cubans first settled, though, yes, when they came to Florida. Tampa was a major center of the Cuban community early on. It's not inconceivable that someone did come here. And here's the problem with Carlos, though. Carlos thinks everything is a sandwich. He caused quite a stir on Twitter some years ago by basically declaring, including a friggin' Pop-Tart,
a
sandwich.
A hot dog
sandwich.
As well.
Yeah.
Hot dog sandwich.
Throw them out.
Pop-Tart sandwich. Empanada sandwich.
Come on.
I mean, it's a food
hot pocket.
Sandwich.
It's a hot pocket. Come on.
Hot pocket's a sandwich.
Oh, no.
No, it's wrong.
It's not a sandwich.
An empanada is not a sandwich.
Empanada's 100%. Okay, let me go here. Did you guys ever have those PB&Js that were like crimped on all the way?
Are you just doing anything you hold like a sandwich is a sandwich? Is that what you're doing?
I mean, I could turn it. I could turn it and then it'd be a sandwich. Seriously, the PB&J sandwich with the crimped edges. You know, the millennials know what I'm talking about. And the kids, like, that's a PB&J sandwich. Now, once you crimp those edges, that's just a cold empanada. And once you've accepted the empanada into your heart as a sandwich, then everything with enough confidence can be a sandwich. So.
It's not a sandwich. Maybe it's a sealed pita pocket. Pitas are not sandwiches. Is a pita a sandwich?
100%. Pita, 100% a sandwich.
Get out of here. That's not a sandwich.
Yeah. No, I feel like I want to hand him a knuckle sandwich. That's one of the sandwiches.
Also a sandwich. Also a sandwich. Not as delicious. Not as delicious, but definitely a sandwich.
Okay, so there has actually been legitimate scandal in the Miami food world this week. And of course, it has to do with some carpetbaggers, because like that's all we're getting these days, is people who treat Miami like the sixth borough here. And so obviously there's restaurateurs from New York flooding this market constantly. And there was a market for them, meaning there was a time when if you couldn't cater to locals or the locals had no interest in your business, you weren't going to survive year round. But that's not necessarily true anymore. And there's a restaurateur, a chef, I think from Israel originally, who has extremely popular restaurants there. A term that you used in Twitter that made me want to punch myself in the face. What was it?
Clubsterants.
Clubsterants is what he runs. I just, God, I want to
If that
walk
doesn't
into
send
sea.
Shivers down your spine, then, you know.
Look, man, I like clubs, a club sandwich. I like clubs.
Sandwich.
I like clubs sandwich. With sandwiches. If you're going to add sandwiches to my life and make it a nightclub, you can make it a clubsterant. That's fine. So like, what's wrong with that?
So this guy is opening Miami Outpost. Is that the proper restaurant terminology? And he posted to his Instagram feed, where he has a pretty considerable following. I guess it was a promo, a tease for an upcoming dish at the Miami version of this restaurant. And Carlo, you tell us, I don't even want to read it. It's so dumb. I don't even want to say it out loud.
So you say the dumb thing, Carlo.
Yeah, you say.
All right. So basically, you know, this guy is the consulting chef on this restaurant, and they're going to open the old China Grill. The Miami folks will know the old China Grill.
I missed that place. It was such a good place. That place is
right
dried up.
Street,
but there's so many places around here that have just dried up.
Yeah,
that just dried up. So these guys said that, you know, they're one of the few folks when you have that kind of money is that can take over a place that big. And the guy, just as by way of introducing the restaurant coming next week, says, you know, I have this new black bean dish that I feel sorry for all the Cubans who have died and will never get to taste this black bean dish. And I am not embellishing that. And I think everybody just sat around and stared at that for about 5 minutes, just
now
wondering.
Now I understand why Billy made you say that instead of saying it himself.
It was so dumb. I mean,
those must be pretty good black beans.
Yeah. And they're to die for, apparently, or to live for.
No, but it's like, first of all, it's just a smattering of black beans.
I did. I earned that. I was angling for that.
Smattering of black beans on a bed of lettuce with, like, first of all, the hard-boiled egg is an innovation. Anything with a hard-boiled egg, I love. But he literally said he felt bad. I'm sorry. You know, that
I got it, that Cubans had to die without getting to taste my black beans.
I'm sorry that the Holocaust happened because I'll never eat my gefilte fish or whatever the hell crazy shit. So he posted this publicly.
I'm glad you said that because that's what I thought.
I'm not glad anyone said any of these things.
No, you're right. It's true. It's true. So, let's all back up. It's terrible.
Now, this guy is famous for, like, inventing the question mark. What is he? This guy makes, like, outlandish claims, this guy, and sells a $24 tomato at his restaurant. So the douchebag quotient is strong in this one. But what does he claim he invented?
I mean, he claimed he invented the whole roasted cauliflower served at restaurants. He claimed he invented tomato sashimi, a bunch of things that, like, you know, I was reading a New York Times story, and the very last line is, he apparently serves great pita bread, and he does not pretend to have invented that. So.
What is tomato sashimi? Is it just slices of tomato?
Yes.
I don't know.
That's what it is. Thinly sliced tomatoes.
Well, apparently, with enough confidence, anything can be sashimi, apparently.
Anything, and a sandwich. But what he claims, though, is that he was using Google Translate from, like, Hebrew into English to make this post, and that what was in his heart or the sentiment that he felt or thought is not what wound up coming on the page.
You love this controversy of some guy said, it's unfortunate that Cubans had to die before tasting my black beans. And you're like a dog
it's
with a bone with this.
Thing. Yes, it's
it is
just
not,
the dumbest
it
thing.
Is, it, isn't, it is a dumb thing, and we can move on from it at any point. You want to move on from the dumb thing.
It's a sandwich.
No, but if you want to stay here, we can stay here and continue to rip this nameless guy that claims to
name.
Tomato sashimi, the question mark.
So, Carlos, and this must happen to you all the time, people say, coming to Miami, need restaurant recommendations. And my first response always is what part of town? Because Miami's a big place. It's hard to get around. And there's great restaurants everywhere now. I mean, it's incredible what's happened down in West Kendall, which is, you know, which used to be sort of a wasteland in terms of East Naples. Yeah. East Naples. Yeah. Like people would have to come east or for that matter, go west in order to eat. But now there's, like, incredible options there. So let's go through some neighborhoods and where are places, because people are coming into Miami all the time, want to find places to eat. Where should we go? Where should we start?
Well, I mean, just to kind of preface that, like, my editor kind of asked me that, like, 2 years ago, and I just emptied my notebook. I just kept a running list of, like, my personal favorite places, not best of, not reviewed by anybody, but places that I go and spend my actual money, not the Herald money. And I just put a list together and I broke it down by neighborhood. It's online. You can find it, like, how to eat like a local in Miami.
But go ahead and give us a few for those who don't want to search it out, who are going to complain about a paywall, who don't want to support journalism.
It's horrible. I mean, like, I love, like, I live near Coral Gables. So, like, there's this new place called Luca Osteria. The guy that invented Eating House, that I remember famously, Stu Gatz tried to get into a 420 dinner that they did some years back at his restaurant, shamelessly tried to get in there. And well, this guy's opened a new just pure pasta restaurant. It's very good. It's not pretentious. It gets nice and loud on the weekends if you want. It's quiet during the week. And it's on right on Giraldo, which is really nice. They've done a great job there. And so, like, Coral Gables, that's, like, a great new spot.
Well, you got to give us five. Get me the fanfare here for Carlos Frias. Perfect. I'm going to get a list of, from the bottom to the top, top five restaurants in South Florida, not specific to any kind of region, because Billy is right when he says, if you're looking for a restaurant in South Florida, you got to tell people where it is. You've got a disparity of an hour each way, depending on where it is that you're stationed. So go ahead, Carlos, start us with number five. I'm putting you on the spot here. Top five restaurants in South Florida or Miami, according to Carlos Frias of the Miami Herald. Go ahead. Number five is?
Dan, number five. Let's say Luca Osteria, number five.
Nice. That's you remove some of the, you keep the drama in it by making that number five, even though it might have been higher. Number four.
Dan, number four restaurant in Miami. Let's say Finca in West Kendall.
Oh, nice.
Good choice, according to Billy.
Great place, yeah. It's a schlep if you don't live down there, but it's worth it.
Yeah, well, it's
for sure.
It's called Farm. You're headed out to an area that
swamp
has some swamp farm. Yes, number three.
Let's say Ariette in Coconut Grove.
Oh, wow.
Number two.
All right, I'm going to try to spread it around here. Number two, let's go on the beach. Let's say Machialina.
You didn't have to spread it out. If you want to spread it out, you're welcome to spread it out. But if you don't want to spread it out, yes, you've got the freedom to decide. And finally, the best restaurant in South Florida, according to Carlos Frias.
Oh, man. I'm whiffing. You know what? El Mago de las Fritas on Cayo.
Wow. Just if you love French fries.
El Mago de las Fritas makes something that you can only find in Miami, which is a Cuban hamburger. You can't find it anywhere else in the country. You can't even find it in Cuba anymore. And Mago and Rey de las Fritas make two of the best, like iconically two of the best. And Mago, I have a preference for them because they're nearby.
Well, tell people what the difference is between an American hamburger and a Cuban hamburger.
This one's called un hamburger.
That's right.
No, I'm kidding.
Is it a sandwich? Is it a sandwich?
It uses like chorizo, cumin seasonings in like an all beef flattened patty with like little round Cuban bread buns versus the long little round Cuban bread buns and crispy fried potatoes. Like they shave the potato, deep fry them, so you get crispy and chorizo and bread and meat, and it's fantastic.
Fabulous. And we invented something interesting down here. Well, you wrote a story about the invention of it. The Ventanita.
La Ventanita. We invented that here. The ability to just pull up to a window and get coffee and an empanada.
Correct. A sandwich. Basically, Cuba basically had these little carts. Like, you know, that's where everybody gathered. They had these little, like, hot dog carts in New York, right? And they would serve hot coffee and little thimble shots. But when they came to the U.S., they were missing that culture. It was 1,000 degrees outside. Right around the 60s, all those open restaurants, Miami was full of like restaurants with no fronts. This was pre-AC. So AC was starting to be installed. They enclosed a restaurant, but how do we keep coffee service coming? Felipe Valls at Versailles, before he owned Versailles, was a restaurant salesman. And he's like, let's take the bottom off a window, made in Hialeah, of course, installed it at this place that no longer exists, that burned down in a fire. But, you know, the idea of opening the window and serving coffee and like folks congregating for, you know, their quick bites and their political cortaditos.
Right. Yeah, it's true. Pastelitos y chisme, everything served at the Ventanita, all kinds of intrigue. My last question is, because this is a struggle for my people every Sunday, Chinese food night. Miami is not well known for, we don't have a very large Asian population in general. There's no Chinatown, kind of like on 163rd, 167th Street, North Miami Beach. There are some, you know, markets and restaurants and things, but not really a high concentration. Just it's a tribe that's not well represented down here. So around the county, where to get Chinese food? This is a constant struggle
for
me.
This also seems like not that you're interested in content at all, but you're basically trying to take care of your dinner on Sunday.
Absolutely. 100%. Okay. Purely selfish motivations. Okay, this is a struggle for my people.
Yeah, I mean, Chinese food is delicious, and I do believe that what you say is so here.
What am I going to eat on Christmas, Dan?
It is a very underrepresented population in South Florida. One of the few, because we have plenty of representation.
My favorite spot to have Chinese food is a place called Con Chao.
It's on
Bird Road. And it's just like, they don't have the little carts. You know, dim sum is served like only on the weekends. They serve it every day. They serve it to order. That's a great spot. If you want that, but with ambiance and three times the price, you go to Tropical Chinese, which is still excellent. And it's very nice. And it costs more. On 163rd, I love King Palace.
Yeah.
They have several roasted Peking-style ducks, and they only have a certain number a day. And when they're done, they're done. And it's because they're really great. They really put a lot of effort into it, and that's a great spot.
And I will throw into the mix in the downtown area, Tony Chan's. I'm kind of partial to old-school Tony Chan's Water Room. I will say Woo's down in Coral Gables, South Miami area. And I think some of the best in town is a tiny little dump on Hallandale Beach Boulevard called Wonton Gardens.
I'm going to add one more, and that's a place that just like opened not too long ago, and it's like, it's by a Colombian guy doing Chinese food.
What?
Yeah, and it's really great. The guy studied in different parts of Asia, and he's just in a little hidden place called, it's got a terrible name, Zitsum, because the guy's last name is Zitman. So it's called Zitsum, and it's in Coral Gables, and it's really great.
He's a Colombian with the last name Zitman opening a Chinese restaurant?
His name is Zitman. I don't know her providence.
Is it German? Or it sounds Jewish, though. It could be fascinating.
It's definitely German.
But it's good.
Was that great. The accent that you were going for there? That was the accent.
That is okay. The accent I was going for. The chairman.
Thank you, Carlos. Appreciate your time, sir.
Happy Thanksgiving.
My pleasure, guys. Same to you guys.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.